Hello, I'm Kristen Marchand, and this is the Opiongo Line, a podcast dedicated to preserving the unique culture and local heritage of the Upper Madawaska and Opiongo River Valleys here in Eastern Ontario, Canada. Today, I'm joined by Leslie Betts, Jeff Bowman, Karen and Rob Filipkowski, Michael C. Glofczewski, Carol and Brian Peterson, Lynn Stewart, and Mark Wormke, all members of the Opiongo Readers Theatre. They're here to help us celebrate the upcoming St. Patrick's Day, a day when the world happily divides into only two types of people, the Irish and those who want to be Irish, at least for a day. This year, the Opiongo Readers Theatre has got a truly novel show. It's based on William Percy French, a very talented fellow born in 1854 in a place called Clunyquin House near Tulsk in County Roscommon, Ireland. 23 years later, while still a young engineering student at Trinity College Dublin, Percy French wrote his first successful song, Abdul Abubul Amir. It was for an undergraduate show he was involved with at the time, but his words would quickly echo throughout the world, sung from campus to campus, country to country. In fact, Abdul Abubul Amir is still being sung in some of the better musical halls to this day. Percy French's first famous ballad was really a spoof on the comic operas of his day, and over the next 43 years, until 1920 when he died, Percy French wrote some of the best comedic ballads ever. But he also wrote some of the most tender lyrics to come out of Ireland as well. So today, the Opiongo Readers Theatre happily presents nearly 20 of Percy French's best songs and poems. We'll begin in just a moment with that first famous song that he wrote during the Russo-Turkish War about two illustrious warriors, one Turk and one Russian. But before we launch into that, we are also very happy to inform you that today, the Opiongo Readers Theatre may also occasionally break into song. Yes, you heard that right. Our wonderful readers do, on occasion, sing. And some of them are just as good at singing as they are at reading. But judge for yourself. Here's Jeff Bowman accompanying himself on guitar with Abdul Abubul Amir.
The sons of the prophet are hardy and grim, and quite unaccustomed to fear. But none were so reckless of life or of limb as Abdul Abubul Amir. When they wanted a man to encourage the van or to harass the foe in the rear, oh dear, or to take a redoubt, they would always send out for Abdul Abubul Amir. There are heroes in plenty and well-known to fame in the ranks that were led by the Tsar. But the bravest of all was a man by the name of Ivan Paczynski Skadar. He could imitate tool, play euchre and pool, and perform on the Spanish guitar. In fact, quite the cream of the Muscovite team was Ivan Paczynski Skadar. One morning the Russian had shouldered his gun and assumed his most truculent sneer, and he was walking downtown when he happened to run into Abdul Abubul Amir. Young man, says Bulbul, can your life be so dull that you're anxious to end your career? For infidel, no, you have trod on the toe of Abdul Abubul Amir. your ultimate look upon sunshine and brook. Make your last remarks on the war, which I mean to imply you're going to die. Mr. Count, cast a whiskey cigar. Said the Russian, my friend, my remarks in the end will avail you but little, I fear. For you'll never survive to repeat them alive, Mr. Abdul-Abul-Bulamir. Then the bold Mamluk drew his trusty shabuk, and he shouted, Allah Akbar. And being intent upon slaughter, he went for Ivan Puchinsky Skidar. Just as his knife had abstracted the life, in fact he was shouting huzzah. He felt himself struck by that subtle Kalmuck, Count Ivan Puchinsky Skidar. The Sultan drove up in his red-crested fly to give the survivor a cheer. He arrived just in time to exchange a goodbye with Abdul-Abul-Bulamir. And Skobeloff, Gurko, and Gorshakov too drove up in the Emperor's car. But all they could do was to cry Dos Vanyadu to Ivan Puchinsky Skidar. There's a grave where the waves of the Blue Danube roll, and on it in characters clear is, stranger, remember to pray for the soul of Abdul-Abul-Bulamir. And a Muscovite maiden her vigil doth keep by the light of the true lover's star, and the name that she murmurs so sadly in sleep is Ivan Puchinsky Skidar.
Unlike modern songwriters who can make a career out of just being songwriters, after Percy French graduated from Trinity College, Dublin in 1885 as a civil engineer, he soon took up a full-time job in County Cavan as an inspector of drains. Not exactly a job title that inspired adulation, nor was it considered even back then to have much celebrity status. Still, it was a job, and did inspire Percy French to write this song. Here's Lynn Stewart with William, Inspector of Drains.
Let others betake them to western plains and ease the red man of his ill-gotten gains. No tomahawk shall ever injure the brains of William, the local inspector of drains. He mounts his tall trap, gives his charger the reins, and gallops away through the green country lanes. The board pays the posting, the balance remains with William, the local inspector of drains. He finds out the holding and what it contains, then maps out his system in furlongs and chains, and points out positions for miners and mains. Such wisdom has William, the inspector of drains. He plunges through marshes long haunted by cranes, unmindful of how the dark bog water stains. Traducers a suit that is ardor, he feigns, they little know William, inspector of drains. He stays in his quarters, of course, if it rains, and wakes the piano's voluptuous strains. And if of delay the bold tenant complains, he's sat on by William, inspector of drains. The fair maids of Cavan, this William maintains, though I think one should take it with salt, a few grains, have left in a body their woe-begone swains for William, the local inspector of drains. 'Tis an onerous post, but the writer refrains from dwelling at length on its pleasures and pains. It may not last long, but as yet he remains, yours faithfully, William, Inspector of Drains.
Of course, Percy French being Irish, he also chose subjects for his songs that would get a rise out of even the dead. Here's Mark Wermke with That's why we're burying him.
It was Carrie said to Harry, you will find that when we marry, I can cook the Sunday dinner when the maid's away. Oh, no, dear, he entreated, but his efforts were defeated, and poor Harry had to eat it on the fatal day. That's why we're burying him. That's why the poor man's dead. That's why we're hurrying him off to his last long bed. One chew at the Irish stew, and the patient's spirit fled. That's why the poor man's dead. Mick McGuire joined the choir, and the height of his desire was to sing a tenor solo in the concert hall. He practiced Pagliacci as he heard the airs were catchy. The piano gave a prelude, and he gave one ball. That's why we're burying him. That's why the poor man's dead. That's why we're hurrying him off to his last long bed. One yelp, then cries for help as the eggs flew round his head. That's why the poor man's dead. Frisco Fossy stole a hoss, and ere they strung him up, the boss said, if any girl would marry him, the man goes free. Then up came Widow Twanky, she was lean and she was lanky, and says she, kind sir, I'll tanky, hand him down to me. That's why we're burying him. That's why the poor man's dead. That's why we're hurrying him off to his last long bed. One glance at his only chance, then string me up, he said. That's why the poor man's dead.
Though a master of such songs that sometimes seems to shock, Percy French was also a master of very gentle, much more subtle songs that weren't so much over-the-top satires as simply observational comedy. Here's Leslie Betts with, I don't know.
I'm simply surrounded by lovers since Dad made his fortune in land. They're coming in crowds like the plovers to X for me hand. There's clerks and policemen and teachers, some sandy, some black as a crow. Ma says you get used to the creatures, but I dunno. The convent is in a commotion to think of me taking a spouse, and they wonder I hadn't the notion of taking the vows. 'Tis a beautiful life and a quiet, and keeps you from going below. As a girl I thought I might try it, but I dunno. I've none but meself to look after, and marriage, it fills me with fears. I think I'd have less of the laughter and more of the tears. I'll not be a slave like me mother with six of us all in a row. Even one little baby's a bother, but I dunno. There's a lad that has taken me fancy, I know he's a bit of a limb. And though marriage is terribly chancy, I'd chance it with him. He's coming tonight, I tingle from top of me head to me toe. I'll tell him I'd rather live single, but I dunno.
Here's another love song, but again, full of gentle nudges to those whose advice can't hold a candlestick to the true logic of love itself. It's read by Carol Peterson and is called Whistlin' Phil McHugh.
Oh, Whistlin' Phil McHugh has come over from Bunleahy, and we don't know what's to come to little Marianne Mulcahy. For ever since the day that Phil he came a-whistlin', she stands in the doorway, and she's waitin', and she's listenin'. Oh, Mary, you're contrary. Come in and shut the door. Phil's a rover, sure 'tis over, and he'll not come back ashore. But she's listening for the whistling, and she's waiting by the shore for that arm to be warm around her waist once more. There's Thady of the cows, sure, you know 10-acre Thady. With his fine new slated house, he'd make her quite the lady. But Thady needn't stay, and there's no use his enthraging, for her heart is far away, 'tis with Phil McHugh stravaging. There's Danny Michael Dan, who is 6 foot in his stockings, a very proper man. But she never heeds his knockings. She'll keep him standing there for 3/4 of a minute. But she's racing like a hare when she thinks that Phil is in it. 'Tis wisdom's golden rule, I do teach her till I tire, that every girl's a fool, aye, and every man's a liar. What's that you say you hear, that set you all a-thrimbly? 'Tis but the wind, I fear, that is whistling down the chimbley. Oh, Mary, you're contrary, come in and bar the door. What's that scufflin', Phil, you ruffian? Sure, I knew he'd come ashore. She's been settin' there and frettin', but now her grievin's o'er, and the singin' will be ringin' in her heart once more.
Sometimes Percy French found humor in the oddest places. Take this next one, also about true love, but more importantly, about what a certain farmer thought a love match might actually add up to. Here's Brian Peterson with McBreen's Heifer.
McBreen had 2 daughters, and each one in turn was offered in marriage to James Hugh O'Byrne. Now Kitty, she was pretty, but Jane, she was plain. So to make up the difference, McBean would explain, he'd give the best heifer he had on the land as sort of a bonus with Jane, understand? But then Kitty would charm the bird off a bush, and that left the lad in a horrid nonplush. And there's no denying Kitty was remarkably pretty, though I can't say the same for Jane. But there's still not to differ the price of a heifer between the pretty and the plain. Entirely bothered was James E. O'Byrne. He thought that he'd give the schoolmaster a turn. Says he to wed Kitty is very good fun, but still is a heifer when all's said and done. A girl she might lose her good looks anyhow, and a heifer might grow to an elegant cow. And still there's no price of the stock, do you mind, as Jane has the face that the devil designed. And there's no denying Kitty was remarkably pretty, though I can't say the same for Jane, and still there's not to differ the price of a heifer between the pretty and the plain. The schoolmaster said with a good deal of sense, we'll reduce the 2 girls to 2 shillings and pence, and the price of a heifer than Jane, I'll be bound, will come out on top by a couple of pound. And still I'm forgetting that down in Glengall the stock is just going for nothing at all. So Jim thought he'd wait to the end of the year, till girls might be cheaper, and stock might be dear. But when he came for Kitty, she was married to McVitie, and McBlain had appropriated Jane. So whether there's a differ of the price of a heifer is a thing he never could explain.
One of Percy French's most famous lyrics had nothing to do with love or even farmyards. It's called Phil the Fluter's Ball, and is presented by Jeff Bowman.
Have you heard of Phil the Fluter from the town of Ballymook? The times were going hard with him. In fact, the man was broke. So he sent out a notice to his neighbors, one and all, as how he liked their company that evening at a ball. And when writing out, he was careful to suggest to them that if they found a hat of his convenient to the door, the more they put in whenever he requested them, the better would the music be for bathering up the floor. With the toot of the flute and the twiddle of the fiddle, hopping in the middle like a herring on the griddle, up, down, hands around, crossing to the wall, hadn't we the gaiety at Phil the Fluter's Ball? There was Mr. Dennis Dougherty, who kept the running dog. There was little Crooked Paddy from the Terra Lowit Bog. There were boys from every barony and girls from every art, and the beautiful Miss Brady's in a private ass and cart. And along with them came Bouncing Mrs. Cafferty. Little Mickey Mulligan was also to the fore. Rose, Suzanne, and Margaret O'Rafferty, the flower of Arbogillion and the pride of Perivore. With the toot of the flute and the twiddle of the fiddle, hopping in the middle like a herring on the griddle, up, down, hands around, crossing to the wall, hadn't we the gaiety at Phil the Fluter's ball? First, little Mickey Mulligan got up to show them how, and then the widow Cafferty steps out and makes her bow. I could dance you off your legs, says she, as sure as you were born, if you'll only make the piper play, the hare was in the corn. So Phil plays up to the best of his ability. The lady and the gentleman begin to do their share. Faith, then, Mick, it's you that has agility. Begorra, Mrs. Cafferty, you're leaping like a hare. With the toot of the flute and the twiddle of the fiddle, hopping in the middle like a herring on the griddle, up, down, hands around, crossing to the wall, hadn't we the gaiety at Phil the Fluter's ball? Then Phil the Fluter tipped a wink to little Crooked Pat. I think it's nearly time, says he, for passing round the hat. So Paddy passed the cobbing round and looking mighty cute, says you got to pay the piper when he toothers on the flute. They all joined in with the greatest joviality, covering the buckle and the shuffle and the cut. Jigs were danced of the very finest quality, but the way to bet the company at handling the foot. With the toot of the flute and the twiddle of the fiddle, hopping in the middle like a herring on the griddle, up, down, hands around, crossing to the wall, hadn't we the gaiety at Phil the Fluter's ball?
Another one of Percy French's favorite subjects centered on what was going on in Ireland at that time. In the second half of the 19th century, much of Ireland was packing up and going overseas, to Australia, the United States, and Canada. Here's Mark Wormke, accompanied by Michael C. Golfcheski on piano with The Emigrant's Letter.
Dear Danny, I'm taking the pen in me hand to tell you we're just out of sight of the land. In the Grand Allen liner, I'm sailing in style, but I'm sailing away from the Emerald Isle. And a long sort of sigh seemed to come from us all as the waves hit the last bit of old Donegal. Ah, it's well to be you that has taken your tay, where they're cutting the corn in Creeshla today. I spoke to the captain, he won't turn her round. And if I swum back, I'd be apt to be drowned. So here I must stay, oh, I've no cause to fret, for their dinner was what you might call a banquet. But though it was sumptuous, I swapped the whole lot for the old wooden spoon and the stirabout pot. And sweet Katie Farrell a wetting the tay where they're cutting the corn in Creeshla today. There's a woman on board who knows Katie by sight, so we talked of old times till they put out the light. I'm to meet the good woman tomorrow on deck, and we'll talk about Katie from here to Quebec. Oh, I know I'm no match for her, oh, not. the least, with her house and two cows, and her brother a priest. But the woman declares Katie's heart's on the say, while mine's with the reapers in Krishna today. If Katie is courted by Patsy or Mick, put a word in for me with the lump of a stick. Don't kill Patsy outright, he has no kind of chance. But Mickey's a rogue you might murder at once. For Katie might think that the longer she waits, a boy in the hand is worth two in the States. And she'll promise to honor, to love and obey some ruffian that's roaming round Krishna today. Ah, goodbye to you, Danny, no more's to be said. And I think the salt water's got into me head. For it drips from me eyes when I call to me mind the friends and the Colleen I'm leaving behind. But still she might wait when I bade her goodbye. There was just the least taste of a tear in her eye, and a break in her voice when she said, "You might stay, but please God you'll come back to old Krishna someday." And a break in her voice when she said, "You might stay, but please God you'll come back to old Krishna someday."
Of course, once that generation of young Irish left the Emerald Isle to seek their fame and fortune across the sea, those who were left behind had their regrets about losing loved ones. Here's Leslie Betts with An Irish Mother.
A wee slip drawing water, the old man at the plough, no grown-up son nor daughter, that's the way we're farming now. No work and little pleasure was the cry before they went. Now they're getting both full measure, so I ought to be content. Great wages men is given in the land beyond the say, but 'tis lonely, lonely living when the childer is away. Ach, the baby in the cradle, blue eyes and curling hair, God knows I'd give a gradle to have little Peter there. No doubt he'd find it funny, lying here upon me arm, him that's earning the good money on a California farm. 6 pounds, or was it 7? He sent last quarter day, but 'tis lonely, lonely living when the childer is away. God is good, there's no better, and the divil might be worse. Each month there comes a letter bringing something for the purse. And the old man's heart rejoices when I read they're doing fine. But it's, oh, to hear their voices, and to feel their hands in mine, to see the cattle driven, and the young ones making hay. 'Tis a lonely land to live in, when the childer is away. When the shadows do be fallen on the old man there and me, 'tis hard to keep from calling, "Come in, children, for your tea." I can almost hear them coming, Mary Kate and little Con. Ach, but I'm the foolish woman, sure they're all grown up and gone. That our sins may be forgiven, and not one to go astray, I doubt I'd stay in heaven if them childer was away.
Despite the great opportunities seized by some Irish when they arrived in places such as California, and where their children might find a better life than what they had left behind in Ireland, still, there were some who longed for Ireland, especially those older Irish men and women who might relate to this lyric read by Carol Peterson. It's called Ballymilligan.
The old woman speaks, "Back to Ballymilligan, it's there that I would be. Back to Ballymilligan beside the silver sea. The wee white houses peeping out to greet the dawn of day. The little trawlers creeping out to fish below the bay. Oh, if I had me will again, it's there that I would be. Back in Ballymilligan, beside the silver sea. They've paid me passage over, I've a grandchild on me knee. And I'm living here in clover, in the home they've made for me. But it hasn't got the charm, and it hasn't got the view of the little hillside farm that my Danny brought to me. Oh, to feel the thrill again when he was courting me, back in Ballymilligan, beside the silver sea. I've been in Wanamaker's and in all the mighty stores that covers many acres and have 40 different floors. But it's down to Katie Ryan I'd be travelling in me shoes to do me bit of buyin' and to hear the neighbours' news. To pay the wee she bill again for sugar and for tea, back in Ballymilligan beside the silver sea. No doubt I'd find a change in it, for time goes rolling on. I fancy I'd feel strange in it, the old companion's gone. But there is one that's sleeping there, the one that I love best. Some day I may be creeping there to lay me down to rest. And then the old grey hill again will shelter him and me. Back in Ballymilligan, beside the silver sea.
Here's another one of those Irish love songs that most everyone has heard at one time or another. But like the previous songs, it's not really about love, but about being away too long from the old sod. Here's Lynn Stewart with Come Back, Paddy Riley, to Bally James Duff.
The Garden of Eden has vanished, they say, but I know the lie of it still. Just turn to the left at the Bridge of Finney, and stop when halfway to Coot Hill. 'Tis there I will find it, I know sure enough, when fortune has come to my call. Oh, the grass, it grows green around Bally James Duff, and the blue sky is over it all. And tones that are tender and tones that are gruff are whispering over the sea. Come back, Paddy Riley, to Bally James Duff. Come home, Paddy Riley, to me. My mother once told me that when I was born, the day that I first saw the light, I looked down the street on that very first morn, and gave a great crow of delight. Now most newborn babies appear in a huff, and start with a sorrowful squall. But I knew I was born in Bally James Duff, and that's why I smiled on them all. That baby's a man now, he's toil-worn and tough, still whispers, come over the sea. Come back, Paddy Riley, to Bally James Duff. Come home, Paddy Riley, to me. The night that we danced by the light of the moon, with Phil to the fore with his flute, when Phil threw his lip over, come again soon, he'd dance the foot out of your boot. That day had I took Long McGee by the scruff, for slanderin' Rosie Kilrain, then marchin' him straight out of Bally James Duff, assisted him into a drain. Oh, sweet are the dreams as the doodeen I puff, of whisperings over the sea. Come back, Paddy Riley, to Bally James Duff. Come home, Paddy Riley, to me. I've loved the young women of every land that always came easy to me. Out walking the bells of the Blackamoor brand and the chocolate shapes of Figgy. But that sort of love is a moonshiny stuff, and never will addle me brain. For the bells will be ringing in Bally James Duff, for me and me Rosie Kilrain. And through all their glamour, their gas and their guff, a whisper comes over the sea. Come back, Paddy Riley, to Bally James Duff. Come home, Paddy Riley, to me. I've struck oil at last, I've struck work, and I vow I've struck some remarkable clothes. I've struck a policeman for saying that now I'd go back to my beautiful Rose. The bells they may blarney, the boys they may bluff, but this I will always maintain. No place in the world like Bally James Duff, no girl like Rosie Kilrain. I've paid for my passage, the sea may be rough, but borne on each breeze there will be. Come back, Paddy Riley, to Bally James Duff. Come home, Paddy Riley, to me.
The Irish don't have to be in California or even Canada to miss the old sod. Sometimes they can be as close as in nearby England. Here's another comedic song by Percy French about two Irish fellows who find themselves in London, but without enough pocket change for even a drink. It's called Cruise on the Pirate Bus and is read by Brian Peterson.
Says Bill to me, I'm beat, says he. I haven't a coin to clink. I can't make both ends meet, says he. I can't make one end drink. Says I to Bill, there's still a trump card that hasn't been played by us. We're both mechanics of nerve and skill. Let's capture a motor bus. We stole her that night. She was green and white. So we painted her red and blue. And you couldn't tell where she'd come from, I'll swear, or where she was going to. For we painted names on her hull. St. James and Richmond and Regent's Park, Victoria and Waterloo, and Kew. By the way of a lark. Twas merry in Oxford Street, and we made the taxi stare. as we bowled along to Bill's old sea song. Oi, tuppence to everywhere! And we piled them in, then Bill would grin, and their looks of hate and rage, when I turned the bus around, and the passengers found we had come to the end of the stage. We were doing first rate, and we shipped the freight of gardeners bound for Kew, and my messmate said, there's breakers ahead, and we headed for Waterloo. To save any fuss, I beached the bus on an island in the stand. Oh, their cries of despair as we left them there, marooned within sight of land. Oh, with a fiendish shout, I warped her out, and what were their woes to us? Then we shipped a fresh crew, and the red flag flew once more from the pirate bus. By night we'd rest in the mews out west, and there securely hid. Our coppers we'd count, till the total amount was close to 100 quid. Then a big fog come, and we drove her home to where we found her first. And I went to propose to the Kilburn Rose, why Bill went out on a bust. A crime, no doubt, if we'd been found out, we might have been jugged for life. But I told this tale by the moonlight pale, and that's how I won me wife.
The Irish may miss their old country, but few Irish are ever self-deceived enough to overlook the many things that are not quite right in Ireland. Take this next lyric, read by Karen Filipkowski. It's about a certain railroad in County Clare that was not known for its on-time arrivals. It's called, Are You Right There, Michael?
You may talk of Columbus's sailing across the Atlantical Sea, but he never tried to go railing from Innes as far as Kilkee. You run for the train in the morning, the excursion train starting at 8. You're there when the clock gives the warning, and there for an hour you'll wait. And as you're waiting in the train, you'll hear the guard sing this refrain. Are you right there, Michael? Are you right? Do you think that we'll be there before the night? You've been so long in starting that ye couldn't say for certain. Still ye might now, Michael, so ye might. They find out where the engine's been hiding, and it drags you to Sweet Coro Finn. Says the guard, back her down on the siding, there's a goods from Kilrush coming in. Perhaps it comes in 2 hours, perhaps it breaks down on the way. If it does, says the guard, by the powers, we're here for the rest of the day. And while you sit and curse your luck, the train backs down into a truck. Are ye right there, Michael, are ye right? Have ye got the parcel there for Mrs. White? Ye haven't, oh, begorra, says it's coming down tomorrow. And well, it might now, Michael, so it might. At Lochlinch the sea shines like a jewel. With joy you are ready to shout when the stoker cries out. There's no fuel and the fire's teetotally out. But hand up that bit of a log there, I'll soon have ye out of the fix. There's a fine clamp of turf in the bog there, and the rest of ye go gathering sticks. And while you're breaking bits of trees, you hear some wise remarks like these. Are ye right there, Michael, are ye right? Do ye think that you can get the fire to light? Oh, an hour you'll require, for the turf it might be drier. Well, it might now, Michael, so it might. Kilkee, oh, you never get near it. You're in luck if the train brings you back, for the permanent way is so queer, it spends most of its time off the track. Uphill the old engine is climbing, while the passengers push with a will. You're in luck when you reach Enniston Mun, for all the way home is downhill. And as you're wobbling through the dark, you hear the guard make this remark. Are you right there, Michael, are you right? Do you think you'll be home before it's light? 'Tis all dependent whether this old engine holds together. And it might now, Michael, so it might, so it might. And it might now, Michael, so it might.
Another great pastime in Ireland is horse racing. And here's a great Percy French song about Rafferty's racing mare. It's sung by Mark Wormke.
You've not seen Rafferty round this way. He's a man with a broken head. His tie and his collar are all gone astray, and his coat for the matter of that. We're racing Rafferty round the place since Rafferty raced his mare. He's a man with an anxious look on his face and a partially murdered air. Oh, Rafferty's racing mare, we met him at the fair. Says he she'll win, so keep your tin for backing the racing mare. Oh, Rafferty's racing mare, we thanked him then and there. And every lad in Ballinafad went backing the racing mare. I was the jockey they chose to ride, and often the owner he swear that there wasn't a leap in the earth too wide to baffle the racing mare. Over hurdle and ditch she went like a witch till she came where the water shone. I gave her her head, but she stopped at it dead. She stopped and I went on. Oh, Rafferty's racing mare, she threw me through the air like a pretty bird, but nary a word from Rafferty's racing mare. Oh, Rafferty's racing mare, I hit the water there, and she drank her fill, but she stood stock still. Damned Rafferty's racing mare. Get up, you lad, says Ballinafad, you'll win the race for us yet. But I didn't care for the look of the mare, nor the way that her legs were set. Says they, the horse'll stay the course, she'll stay it every foot. You're right, says I don't deny, she'll stay just where she's put. Oh, Rafferty's racing mare, we danced around her there. With stones and sticks and bit of bricks, we hit her fair and square. Oh, Rafferty's racing mare, the field she kept us there. But on the brink she'd stand and drink, would Rafferty's racing mare. But where was Rafferty all the time? Oh, Rafferty, he's the lad. There in the ring he stood like a king, cheering the mare like mad. His brother was there, disguised, of course, as a Russian millionaire, giving the odds against every horse, and the longest against the mare. Oh, Rafferty's racing mare, 'twas more than we could bear. When a bookie revealed he was back in the field instead of the racing mare, we've got the day to spare. We've got the millionaire, and we're having a race around the place, and Rafferty, he's the hare.
If you thought that song was a tad peculiar, take a close listen to this next song that pokes fun at the oft-times Irish militias that were parading in Ireland before the rebellion in 1916. It's called Slattery's Mounted Foot and is sung by Lynn Stewart.
You've heard of Julius Caesar and the great Napoleon too, and how the Cork militia beat the Turks at Waterloo. But there's a page of glory that as yet remains uncut, and that's the martial story of the Slattery's Mounted Foot. This gallant corps was organized by Slattery's eldest son, a noble-minded poacher with a double-breasted gun. And many a head was broken eye, and many an eye was shut, when practicing maneuvers in the Slattery's Mounted Foot. And down from the mountains came the squadrons and platoons, 24 fighting men and a couple of stout gossoons. And when we marched behind the drum to patriotic tunes, we felt that fame would gild the name of Slattery's Light Dragoons. Well, first we reconnoitred round O'Sullivan's shebeen. It used to be the sharp house, but we called it the canteen. But there we saw a notice which the bravest heart unnerved: all liquor must be settled for before the drink is served. So on we marched, but soon again each warrior's heart grew pale, for rising high in front of us we saw the county jail. And when the army faced about, 'twas just in time to find a couple of big policemen had surrounded us behind. Still down from the mountains came the squadrons and platoons, 24 fighting men and a couple of stout gossoons. Says Slattery, we must circumvent these bludgeoning bastoons, or else it seems they'll take the names of Slattery's light dragoons. We'll cross the ditch, our leader cried, and take the foe in flank. But yells of consternation here arose from every rank. For posted high upon a tree, we very plainly saw trespassers prosecuted in accordance with the law. We're foiled, exclaimed bold Slattery, here ends our bold campaign. 'Tis merely throwing life away to face that mere and drain. I'm not as bold as lions, but I'm braver nor a hen. And he that fights and runs away will live to fight again. So back to the mountains went the squadrons and platoons, 24 fighting men and a couple of stout gossoons. The band was playing cautiously their patriotic tunes. So sing the fame, if rather lame, of Slattery's light dragoons.
Ireland is a country that has more than a passing acquaintance with the sea. But Ireland also is a country with a network of inland canals. Here's a song about the Royal Canal that runs from the Shannon River to Dublin and is not more than 13 feet in width in most places. But to hear some talk about traversing the Royal might sound as though it was on the high seas. This lyric is called The Mary Ann McHugh, and it's read by Rob Filipkowski.
Come all ye lads who plow the seas, and also seize the plow. The cruise of a canal boat I am telling to ye now. It was the Mary Ann McHugh that braved the angry surf and bore away from Mullingar with a terrible load of turf. And the captain's name was Duff, his manners they were rough, but every cape and headland by its Christian name he knew, and he issued his command, keep her well in sight of land till we make the port of Dublin in the Mary Ann McHugh. The engine was of 1 horsepower, propelled with a black thorn stick. With the wind astrand and filled with corn, the horse went a terrible lick. We worked her round the hill adown, and then Kilcock we passed. And when we seen John Flynn's shebeen, we cried out, land at last! But the captain, James E. Duff, cried, luff, ye lubbers, luff! And don't put in near Johnny Flynn whatever else ye do. We forgot to pay his score, so he's got the police watching for the Mary Ann McHugh. Then up and spake an old sailor who had sailed the Irish Sea. I pray thee, put into yonder port, or the crew will mutiny. To put to sea with the boy and me is a cruel thing, I think, with water, water everywhere, and ne'er a drop a drink. But the captain, James E. Duff, said, enough, my lad, enough. No man before the mast shall ever tell me what to do. Clap on the sail at once, for that's our only chance to keep from debt and danger in the Mary Ann McHugh. With anxious heats the vessel starts upon her altered course. The wind and waves, they lashed the shore, and the pilot lashed his horse. But all in vain. Beneath the strain the rope began to part, and she ran aground on a lump of coal that wasn't put down in the chart. And the captain, James E. Duff, he caught me such a cuff. And then he said, go heave the lead, while the flag at half-mast flew. But I had had enough of the tyrant, James E. Duff. So I heaved the lead at his head and fled from the Mary Ann McHugh.
The Irish, being Irish, they had a hard time not to make fun of the British monarchs who attempted to rule Ireland for over 500 years. Here's one of Percy French's best-known satires on Queen Victoria, made famous most recently by Ronnie Drew of the Dubliners, who used to recite it at appreciative crowds all over the world. French said it was reported to him by a head waiter who overheard it at a private dinner held in Ireland for the Queen late in the 19th century. It's called The Queen's After-Dinner Speech. It's read by Jeff Bowman.
Me lovin' subjects, says she. Here's me best respects, says she. And I'm proud this day, says she, of the elegant way, says she, you gave me the hand, says she, when I came to land, says she. There was some people said, says she, they was greatly in dread, says she. I'd be murdered or shot, says she, as like as not, says she. But it's mighty clear, says she, 'tis not over here, says she, I have cause to fear, says she. 'Tis them Belgians, says she, that's throwing the bomb, says she, and scaring the life, says she, out of me son and the wife, says she. But in these parts, says she, they have warm hearts, says she, and they like me well, says she. Barn Annie Parnell, says she, I don't know, Earl, says she, what's come to the girl, says she. And that other one, says she, that Maud gone, says she, dressing in black, says she, to welcome me back, says she. Though I don't care, says she, what they wear, she see. All that gammon, says she, about me bringing famine, says she. Now model right, says she, that I brought the blight, says she. Or alter the seasons, says she, for some private reasons, says she. And I think there's a slate, says she, off Willie Yates, says she. He should be at home, says she, French polishing a poem, says she. Not writing letters, says she, about his betters, says she. Parading me crime, she say, in the Irish Times, says she. But what does it matter, says she, this magpie chatter, says she. When that welcoming roar, says she, came up from the shore, says she, right over the foam, says she, 'twas like coming home, says she. And me heart fairly glowed, says she, along the rock road, says she. And by Marion round, says she, to Butterstown, says she, till I came to the ridge, says she. That's a Leeson Street bridge, says she. And was welcomed in style, says she, by the beautiful smile, says she, of me Lord Mayor Pyle, says she. Faith, if I done right, says she, I'd make him a knight, says she. Well, I needn't repeat, says she, how they cheered in each street, says she, till I came to them lads, says she, them undergrads, says she. Indeed and indeed, says she, I'd had many a godspeed, says she, but none to compare, says she, with what I got here, says she. Now pass the jug, says she, and fill up each mug, says she, till I give ye a toast, says she, at which ye may boast, says she. I'm of power of sons, says she, all sorts of ones, says she. Some quiet as cows, says she, some always in rows, says she, and the one gives most trouble, says she, the mother loves double, says she. So drink to the men, says she, that have gone in to win, says she, and are clearing the way, says she, to Pretoria today, says she. In the gap of danger, says she, there's a Connaught Ranger, says she, and somewhere near, says she, is a Fusilier, says she. And he and his skillin's not far, says she, from the heart of the war, says she. And I'll tell you what, says she, they may talk a lot, says she, and them foreign baboons, says she, may draw their cartoons, says she, but what they can't draw, says she, is the lion's claw, says she, and before our flag's furled, says she, we'll own the world, says she.
As much as Percy French could skewer the British, he also knew his own people well enough to make fun of some of their more outlandish characters at the same time as he held up to honor those he greatly respected. Here's another one of French's many poems, this one called The Four Farrellys. It's read by Karen Filipkowski.
In a small hotel in London, I was sitting down to dine when the waiter brought the register and asked me if I'd sign. And as I signed, I saw a name that set my heart astir. A certain Francis Farrelly had signed the register. I knew a lot of Farrellys, and out of all the crew, I kept on sort of wondering, which Farrelly were you? And when I'd finished dinner, I sat back in my chair, going round my native land to find what Farrelly you were. Were you the keen-eyed carryman I met below Kenmare, who told me that when Ireland fought, the odds were never fair? If Cromwell had met Sarsfield or met Owen Roe O'Neill, it's not to Minister Gladstone we'd be looking for repeal. Would have Ireland for the Irish, not a Saxon to be seen, and only Gaelic spoken in that house on College Green. Told me landlords were the devil, their agents 10 times worse, and every sort of government for Ireland was a curse. Oh, if you're that Francis Farrelly, your dreams have not come true. Still, slánche, slánche Franchine, for I like a man like you. Or were you Francis Farelli that often used to say he'd like to blow them papishes from dairy walls away? The boy that used to bother me that Orange Lodge to join and thought that history started with the Battle o' the Boyne. I was not all with he, Francis, the Pope is not my friend, but still I hope, poor man, he'll die without that bloody end. And when you're quit from care yourself and get to kingdom come, it's no use teaching you the harp, you'll play the orange drum. Ach, man, you were a fighter, of that I had no doubt, for I seen you in Belfast one night when Antrim Road was out. And many a time that evening I thought you were dead, the way them papish paving stones was hopping off your head. Oh, if you're that Francis Farelli who came from North Tyrone, here's looking to ye, Francis, but do leave the Pope alone. Or were you that Francis Farelli that in my college days, for strolling on the Kingston Pier, had such a curious craze? Do ye mind them lovely sisters, the blonde and the brunette? I know I've not forgotten, and I don't think you'd forget. That picnic at the Dargle, the other at the Skull. How my heart was palpitating. Hers wasn't, not a palp. Someone said ye married money, and maybe ye were wise, but the gold you loved was in her hair and the diamonds in her eyes. So I'd like to think ye married her and that you're with her yet. 'Twas some militia officer that married the brunette. But the blonde one always loved ye, and I knew you loved her too. So me blessings on you, Francis, and the blue sky over you. Or were you the Francis Farelli I met so long ago in the bog below Belmullet in the county of Mayo? That long-legged, freckled Francis with the deep-set, wistful eyes that seemed to take their color from those ever-changing skies, that put his flute together as I sketched the distant scene and played me Planxty Kelly in the wakes of Inneskeen, that told me in the autumn he'd be sailing to the west to try and make his fortune and send money to the rest. And would I draw a picture of the place where he was born, and he'd hang it up and look at it and not feel so forlorn. And when I had it finished, you got up from where you sat and you said, well, you're the devil, and I can't say more than that. Oh, if you're that Francis Farelli, your fortune may be small, but I'm thinking, Francis, that I love you best of all, and I never can forget you, though it's years and years ago, in the bog below Belmullet, in the county of Mayo.
Before we leave you today, we have one last lyric by Percy French, whose heart was as warm as his songs could sometimes be satiric. It's called Later On, and it's a subtle and gentle reminder to us all of how precious Percy French considered his fellow Irishmen and women.
When we're children at our lessons, it is beautiful to think of good time that is coming later on. When we've done with silly copybooks and horrid pens and ink, what a lovely time is coming later on. The rivers of New Zealand, the mountains of Peru, the watersheds of Europe and the tribes of Timbuktu, all the facts without the fancies, all the tiresome and true, will be nowhere in that lovely later on. We'll forget the foolish fables that were written by Fontaine in the pleasant time that's coming later on. At those 12 times 20 tables, we will never look again in lazy time that's coming later on. The date of Magna Carta, the plot they called the Rye, the counties that are bounded by the Humber and the Wye, we may not quite forget them, but we mean to have a try in the lazy time that's coming later on. Oh, my optimistic hero, there are lessons you must learn in the queer time that is coming later on. The masters and examiners you'll find at every turn in the hard times that are coming later on. Misfortune as a governess will teach you many things. A tutor called experience will moderate your flings. You'll learn how men make money, and you'll learn that it has wings in the strange times that are coming later on. Then you'll meet the radiant vision who is all the world to you. You'll attend her mother's lectures later on. You'll learn that what's enough for one is not enough for two, nor enough for half a dozen later on. No, the work is never ended, though for holidays you crave there are popguns to be mended for robbers in the cave. You fancy you're the master, but you find that you're a slave to a curly-headed tyrant later on. And so, through all your lifetime, you are longing for the day, the lovely day that's coming later on, when pens and inks and copybooks will all be laid away. And that day is surely coming later on, for when you're really tired, having done your level best, when the story's nearly ended and the sun sets in the west, then you'll lie down very gently, and the weary will find rest, and I fancy we'll deserve it later on. Later on, later on, oh, the many friends have gone, sweet lips that smiled and loving eyes that shone. Through the darkness into light, one by one they've winged their flight, and perhaps we'll play together later on.
I'm Kristen Marchand, and for Leslie Betts, Jeff Bowman, Karen and Rob Filipkowski, Michael C. Glocheski, Carol and Brian Peterson, Lynn Stewart, Mark Wormke, and our producer, Barry Conway, we'd all like to wish you a very merry St. Patrick's Day. Good day, and God bless.